Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and maybe because it's because I just got back from traveling myself, but I'm very aware right now of the appeal of getting away and seeing the world through fresh eyes. We took calls yesterday about places you want to show your children, although with a dollar so weak against the euro, it makes a visit to the Eiffel Tower just about out of reach. And with $4 a gallon gasoline, well, even a trip to the shore might be a major undertaking right about now. So what to do? Well, I am betting that Rick Steves has some advice. He's the author of more than 30 travel guidebooks and the host and producer of a public television program and a radio show on travel, and he joins me now. Welcome to WNYC. Rick, so nice to meet you.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be here.
Is that question of traveling despite the weak dollar one you're getting a lot these days?
Oh, yeah, sure. But I've been teaching travel for 25 or 30 years now, and the dollar is always up and down. It is at a historic low, I would say. And I just think, you know, a lot of people say, should I wait? And I say, well, you may be dead. Go now. The dollar, I don't think, is going to get better. I think it is where it should be. I think we're just not as wealthy on a global scale as we think we like to think we are. Basically, we got to get used to standing in line at the bus station with the Portuguese people instead of consuming high on the menu with the Danes and the Germans.
Huh. But certainly people are going to have to count their pennies and figure out what things are going to really cost if you're getting, you know, dollar and a half per euro right now.
Oh, yeah. The only thing good about that, it just occurred to me, is it's easy to multiply it now. I was just in Rome 2 days ago, and coming here, I live in Seattle, coming to New York, it's interesting to compare prices. You know, there's a fixed price for the taxi from the airport in Rome to downtown. It's 40 euros, $60. Fixed price from JFK to Manhattan is $50. You know, ballpark, it's the same. 12 million Americans went to Europe last year. 12 million will go this year. My guidebooks are selling better than ever. My tours are selling better than ever. My son's in Rome with a bunch of students right now, and I was hanging out with them, and they know how to travel cheaply. He just got a round-trip ticket to Bulgaria from Rome for a three-day weekend for $30. I was looking for new restaurants for my guidebook in Rome, and just two nights ago, we looked at a bunch of great places, teeming with local people, famous for the quality of their pizza. Granted, it's a pizzeria, but it's a classic place. And 8 euros is what a meal-sized pizza costs. That's $12. And 4 euros for a quarter liter of decent wine for $6. Well, you can eat well in downtown Rome in very characteristic surroundings with local people for under $20. It's not going to break the bank.
And it was so darn inconvenient when the euro debuted at 87 cents.
I know, that's the problem.
How did you do the math?
That's the problem.
Listeners, we have a few minutes for calls for Rick Steves. Maybe you see his travel stuff and want to have the opportunity to ask him a question, or even if you don't know him previously, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or maybe your own tips on travel in the age of the weak dollar, 212-433-9692. I mean, Rick, I just got back from Central America. That's one solution. And I can't tell you how many people I know who seem to be taking vacations in Argentina
right
these days because the dollar is still very strong there.
You know, Argentina's a budget haven right now, but my travel dreams are not taking me to Argentina. Brian, people always ask me, where's the dollar going to be? Give me some buying power. And what's the best value? Well, if your travel dreams are taking you to Ireland, and I say the best value is Portugal, for you, the best value really is Ireland. You should go where your travel dreams are taking you and travel smarter. You see, we still go to I do Europe because it's sort of the waiting pool for world exploration as far as I'm concerned for Americans. That's where a lot of us want to go first, and that's where I just focus, so that's my specialty. And, you know, we still go to that fine restaurant in Paris, but we order a carafe of house wine for $15 instead of a bottle of fine wine for $50 or $60. We, instead of a three-star hotel for $350, I'll go to a one-star hotel for $150, save $200 a night. I mean, we have the same essential experience, but we need to order lower on the menu. Every country in Europe has B&Bs. Husrum is Norwegian for chambre d'hôte, which is French, for Zimmer, which is German, for bed and breakfast, offering double the cultural intimacy for half the price. The irony, and I've been teaching this for 25 years, is in so many cases, the less you spend, the more you experience.
And you have a fan in Pawling, New York, and his name is Mike, and he's on the line. Hi, Mike. You're on with Rick Steves.
Hi, I love your show.
Thank
Hi,
you.
Rick. I love your books.
Hey, thank you.
Just wanted to, my wife and I really saved cost. We used your book to travel England, Wales, and England, Wales, and Scotland year before last, and then we did Ireland the following year spending 3 weeks car camping.
Oh, yeah.
And we have found that the UK and Ireland, the campgrounds are just wonderful. We've only ran into one campground that was, you know, kind of questionable in terms of cleanliness, but otherwise they're great. The pubs are close by. Mm-hmm. You know, we camped in on Achill Island in Ireland on the beach, and we camped on the beach in Loch Ness, and you can walk to the pubs, and it's just a wonderful way to go.
And by the way, Mike, you're talking about an area which has the most expensive hotels in Europe, so the cost savings would be the most pronounced. I always go for the budget tricks, camping or youth hosteling or whatever, in the more expensive countries where the savings are really huge.
Mike, thanks a lot for your call. So do you ruin a place by recommending it? We have a comment on our website mm-hmm. that says, gosh, I went to a restaurant and found 30 other people there who saw it in your guidebook.
Yeah, well, I guess my guidebooks are just too good. I mean, that is a problem.
That's a problem
every guidebook writer wants to have.
That's exactly right.
And, but that's why I'm over there for 4 months out of the year trying to stay ahead of the crowds. I mean, as I mentioned, a lot of Americans go to Europe, and you know, you don't want to use these guidebooks robotically. But if you've got 3 nights in Rome or 3 nights in Paris, it's nice to have somebody who's done the lead work for you, because there's some great places. But people who don't want the crowds of Americans, they can go one step further. All over Europe, you can find what I call back doors, places that have no promotional budget, where you're part of the party instead of part of the economy. And that's a challenge for people, and that's one thing I talk about, is how to get the experience. I was just in a stadium in Dublin with 50,000 people, not a single tourist there. It was a hurling match, and I learned a lot about a new game I'd never heard of. I mean, it makes hockey look mild, airborne hockey with no injury timeouts. That's what it felt like. And also, you learn a lot of new swear words when you go to a stadium packed with Irish sports fans.
Jesse in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jesse.
Hey, I love your show. I just wanted to ask one question of Mr. Steve's. Could you name that pizzeria that you mentioned in Rome?
The pizzeria I mentioned, the nickname is the Morgue, because all
the
tables are marble slabs. And it's on Viale Trastevere, one stop over the river on the tram from downtown Rome into the Trastevere. That's across the river. I had a whole bunch of restaurants I can't remember. I'm a little jet-laggy because 2 days ago I was in Rome.
You could stay home and have great pizza in Brooklyn.
It's thick pizza here. It's thin pizza over there. It's interesting how the measure of a good pizza is different in Italy.
Gian in New Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I'm actually a fourth-year medical student about to graduate, and I have all these loans, and me and my friends were trying to take a trip, and we're trying to figure out where to go, and, you know, we settled on going to Southeast Asia as opposed to going to Europe, just because financially it seemed like we were going to kind of get more bang for our buck. Do you feel like there's going to be a trend that way? I mean, considering how weak the dollar is, and just people are going to travel to places where your dollar is going to go farther.
Well, I suppose there would be a trend that way. I'm just glad Americans are traveling. I think it's great that Americans are not afraid to get out there and explore the world. We're 4% of this planet, and for us to get out there and learn that other people find different truths to be self-evident and God-given is a beautiful thing. And you'll certainly find that in South Asia and Southeast Asia. You know, my favorite country is India, and then Indonesia and Thailand and Japan. But I've spent 4 months a year for the last 25 years making Europe my specialty, and that's where I'm sort of committed to being the tour guide or the travel writer. So I'm focusing on Europe, and I don't care how low the dollar gets. People are still going to want to see the Eiffel Tower and Mona Lisa and have a nice glass of red wine in Tuscany.
I got to ask you, I know your public television show involved traveling with your children.
Right.
So I'll ask you the question that I asked the listeners yesterday. Where are the places in the world that you just had to take your kids?
Well, somebody says they got little kids and they're going to Europe and they want to know where to take them. I often say to Grandma and Grandpa's on the way to the airport.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
But I mean, I've written whole chapters on traveling with kids in my books. And
I have a friend who says there's no such thing as a vacation with little kids, just a change of venue.
But it's more fun to change diapers in Paris than in New York, I think. But, you know, tonight on WNET, your local public television station, we're debuting a new show of ours that we've never shown. We got a 2-hour travel special tonight, one show on Burgundy that's never been seen, and we're the family on one of these canal barges, and it's just glorious, sumptuous countryside and great, great food and wine and so on. And then we're showing a show about how we made our show. We're showing a show about Milano, and then I believe the Besque of Tuscany. So there's lots of good travel coming up tonight for a couple hours on WNET.
Robert in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Robert.
Hello there. Listen, I want to thank you for going from political racism to travel. I love that.
Hey, it may be anything at any moment.
That's the game. I want to ask Steve the following question. My wife is a teacher, and she's getting the spring break in, I guess it's the fourth week of April. Where is the craziest, not too expensive, fun place that two people who usually go to Europe can go?
The craziest, not too expensive, fun place. You know, I like the south coast of Portugal, Salema. There's little villages there that are just idyllic as can be. And then from southern Spain, take the 90-minute fast boat ride over to Morocco. They've got a new king who likes Tangier. His dad didn't want to give a single penny of federal money to Tangier. Consequently, it was like the armpit of Africa. I was just there a couple months ago, and Tangier is a delightful place, and it's wild and crazy and cheap and an easy side trip from all the tourists of the Costa del Sol. By the way, Robert, you're talking politics. I've got a talk called Travel as a Political Act, believe it or not, I'm given tomorrow at the Javits Center at the travel show here. And I think it's a political act for Americans to travel and realize that a lot of people have challenged the same problems that we do with different ways. And that's the fun thing about travel. It kind of carbonates your outlook on things. And you come home, and I think you can deal with the things that are confronting us a little more wisely.
Do you think travel is inherently a political act, or does it depend where you go and what you do?
Well, if you take a cruise ship to the Caribbean and you come home and you've just exacerbated the difference between you and the rest of the world and you've gained no understanding, I don't think it's a political act. But if you go to Europe and you travel in Eastern Europe and you find out what a celebration it is for all those people to have their hard-won freedom, and you go to Polish friends who 20 years ago were taking their windshield wipers in at night because somebody would rip them off and the black market would sell it back to them, now they see this festival of pent-up entrepreneurial spirit, you realize travel's a political act, and you come home and you agree with Mohammed, who 1,500 years ago said, "Don't tell me how educated you are, tell me how much you've traveled."
Our next guest certainly is taking travel as a political act this week. We will be speaking after the news with Lauren Mazel, the conductor of the New York Philharmonic, who took the orchestra to North Korea.
Oh, great. That's exciting.
Quite an act of travel as a political act. So even though it's a coincidence, you wind up as kind of a warm-up act for him with that statement. Before you go, we have about a minute and a half left. We were reading up on you for this interview and discovered that you've joined with the ACLU for a campaign to decriminalize marijuana.
Yeah.
Is there any connection with your travel writing in that, or is it just something you believe in?
Oh, of course. You go to the Netherlands and you realize that the Dutch people tell me a society has to make a choice. Tolerate alternative lifestyles or build more prisons. Long time, my friends have been telling me in Europe we're experts in incarceration in the United States. And right now in the news, I realize we've just cracked that 1%. And we've got the most people in prison of any country around. When you go to Europe, you realize that drug policy, for instance, the measure of an effective drug policy for society over there is called harm reduction, not how many people you lock up. So I'm proud to work with the ACLU to let people know that there's smarter ways that we can do our very serious work on fighting drug abuse and drug problems. You know, Brian, it's a big topic. I hope we could talk about it sometime. But on my website at ricksteves.com, I've got lots of articles and interviews and so on this, you know, this kind of political edge of travel, as well as the practical budget-saving stuff.
Are you at all concerned about alienating your travel audience with that kind of activism?
I don't care about alienating my travel audience by talking the truth to people. When you leave the world, since 9/12, the role of a travel writer, I think, has become a little bit like the medieval jester. You can go out there, find out what it's like, come home, tell the king, and they won't kill you. They need to know it.
Rick Steves, travel writer. Now, let me just make sure we know everything you're doing that people in our area can take advantage of. On Channel 13 tonight.
Yeah, from 7 till 9, I believe, 2 hours, we have a travel festival, including a brand new show on Burgundy. I'm at the travel. No, I'm sorry, that's tomorrow night. That's Saturday night.
Saturday night,
yeah.
At 7
Saturday
on Channel 13.
Seven,
and
yeah.
You're at the Javits Center speaking tomorrow?
Tomorrow and Sunday. And all the details on what I'm doing and our books and so on are simply at our website at ricksteves.com, plus 100 hours of archives of my public radio show that people can tune into anytime.
Rick Steves, nice to meet you. Thanks
Thank
for coming
you.
In.
Thank you. Good to be here.